This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
The Biden impeachment moved a little bit along today. We'll talk about that. We make fun of Nikki Haley, the AG of West Virginia is here. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, let's talk about what happened today with Joe Biden's brother, the impeachment. Is he going to actually be impeached? Let's dig into a few things here. It's going to be an all over the place show tonight on I'm Right, because there's a little of this and a little of that. First, Joe Biden's brother, Jim. He had a closed door. That's why you haven't seen any video of it. A closed door meeting today with the House. He's there answering some questions. This is all part of the Joe Biden impeachment inquiry. Remember, as you know, Joe Biden has not been impeached. This is an impeachment inquiry. This essentially allows them to ask more people more questions. So they bring in his brother, Jim, and they're asking Jim Biden some questions about him, Joe, his business. And along those lines, what's one of the things they were talking about today? Well, this is actually interesting. It's not interesting because the story in and of itself is interesting. It's interesting because it's a wonderful preview of how things are done, how corruption, bribery, scandal, how it's done at a federal level, at a DC level. You see, when we think of political corruption, corrupt politicians, I don't know what you picture. Here's what I picture. An envelope full of cash, right? Two guys sitting down, sipping on a beer somewhere, and one guy slides the other guy a briefcase under the table full of cash. That's what we think about. More Bob Menendez type, gold bars in his house. But the truth is, that kind of corruption, envelopes full of cash, is very common at the local level. Your big city, your small town, wherever you're watching me from, that's where that stuff happens. At the federal level, because of all the oversight and documentation, it actually doesn't happen that way. But it does happen in a different way. You see, the people who run this country, Democrat and Republican, they look at the Treasury of America as being this gigantic piggy bank, and they want to make withdrawals for themselves, of course. They're never for the good of the country. They never think about you. They never think about me. Always for themselves. But how do you dip your hands in there? Well, here's a great example. Joe Biden and Jim Biden started up a little hospital chain, see? The hospital chain ended up going belly up, of course. Of course it did. But not before Joe and Jim ended up doing pretty well from the whole thing. This is a Biden family special, but I don't actually want to just criticize the Bidens, because this is how it is done at the federal level. Remember Joe Biden's cancer research charity? Remember that? Joe Biden started a cancer research charity. We learned a little bit about this before the election. Raised millions of dollars for it. Nobody can locate anything that they did when it comes to cancer research. It was almost just an empty office building. Now, granted, they had staffers in this charity, this nonprofit, and those staffers made a pretty generous income. But cancer, oh, they didn't dig into any of that. Again, America is just, to all these people, it's just a big pot of gold, and they're just trying to figure out how to dip their hands into it. So that's what happened today, and that's what's going on in the government. Now, what's going to come of this, Joe Biden getting impeached? Well, the Hunter Biden stuff is still to come, and the Joe Biden stuff is going to come after that, if it comes at all. And Joe Biden is probably not going to get impeached. And it was interesting today to watch James Comer talk about the reason Joe Biden probably won't be impeached.
Kentucky Congressman James Comer tells Spectrum News the math keeps getting worse for Republicans, whose narrow majority in the House got even tighter after losing a New York seat.
I think the conference will get to see what happens with this Mayorkas impeachment in the Senate, and how serious the Senate treats that as to whether or not we impeach Joe Biden over here, or we just focus on holding him accountable.
So the numbers aren't there. He's not as confident that the numbers are there. And this is the guy kind of spearheading all this. And that is interesting. The numbers aren't there. What numbers? Well, the number of Republicans in the House. James Comer saying we don't have enough Republicans in the House to impeach. That's interesting. Hang on a second. Let me grab a document here. Sorry, this is a list. This is a list of Republicans in the House who voted to expel George Santos. George Santos, who was convicted of no crimes, none whatsoever. But anyway, James Comer's worried that he doesn't have the numbers. I just want to look at this list really quickly of people who voted to have George Santos expelled. And man, that is so weird. There's a name on this list, James Comer. Huh. So James Comer, just recently, voted to kick out a Republican who was convicted of no crimes whatsoever. In fact, even the alleged crimes he committed were committed before he got to the House. So James Comer just reduced the GOP's majority in the House. We, of course, lost that special election. Now a Democrat holds it. And now James Comer is telling you we can't impeach Joe Biden because we don't have the numbers. Is that not the most GOP thing in the history of GOP things? And that brings us to the impeachment that we've already had, the impeachment of Mayorkas. Remember, they impeached them in the House. The actual trial is in the Senate. Alejandro Mayorkas has already been impeached. Impeachment is done, remember. But impeachment is not removal. What it does is it moves this whole thing to the Senate where they have a trial. Except, you see, communists don't do things like the low-T loser GOP does. You know what I was thinking about this morning? I'm not getting sidetracked. Just stay with me. You know what I was thinking about this morning? I was thinking about the moments in the last 5-10 years where they were critical moments and we failed or someone failed. You know, we could have zigged and we zagged. Should have zigged and we zagged. I think a lot about those moments. And one of those moments was Donald Trump gets elected president. He appoints Jeff Sessions as his AG, the country's AG. And immediately, Democrats and the system, they launch a heavy propaganda campaign that Donald Trump is a Russian asset. There was Russian collusion, Russia. You remember all this stuff. And Jeff Sessions, in facing all that propaganda, instead of saying, no, there wasn't Russian collusion. In fact, as AG, I announcing today that I'm launching an investigation into the FBI, into the CIA, into every organization that promoted a phony Russian collusion story. Instead of doing that, Jeff Sessions did the right thing. Remember it? And he recused himself from the investigation. Well, I mean, it wouldn't be right for me to get involved. After all, I'm an officer and a gentleman. And then we remember Democrats spent the first 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency, the Mueller investigation, kneecapping his entire agenda. Which brings me to where we are now. That's how Republicans do it, doing the right thing. Of course, to destroy themselves, their agenda, and the things you care about, but it's the right thing, obviously. The communists don't play those games. The communists intend to win. It's what I admire a lot about them. If they weren't such demonic, evil, murderous pieces of trash, I would become one. They do want to win, though. You see, this impeachment trial is going to happen in the Senate, right? After all, that would be the right thing. That's what they're going to do, except Senator Ron Johnson's not so confident. But are we in store for any surprises? Is he actually going to get kicked out?
I can't imagine that. I doubt there will even be a trial. I don't know all the rules around impeachment. I don't know to what extent the Democrats may be able to just call this up as a question, table the impeachment and just move on. This may be a one quick vote and over. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, they're tabling impeachment. At least that's the rumor today, is that Democrats' trial. Do you think we're going to do the right thing and allow you to take our guy, Mayorkas, and embarrass him nationally, interrogate him, put him on trial? Because it's the right thing? They laugh about things like that. Of course they're not going to go through with this whole thing. Of course they're not. That's a GOP thing. Well, it is the rules, guys. After all, it says here in the Constitution that I have to allow you to destroy me. Of course, they're not going to take it up. They play to win. We play to lose the right way. Now, speaking of losing, I even know the numbers. The number wasn't surprising to me, and this number is low, of course, because they lie about everything. But we find out that 7.2 million illegals have been invited into the country, not allowed, invited into the country by the Biden administration in just 3 years. That is a population that is greater than the population of 36 states. In 3 years, the Biden administration has intentionally remade America on purpose. Remember, it's not a fumble or a stumble or a bumble. They've remade the demographics of this nation. And they still have another year at least to do so. They might win re-election. Then they have another four. What does America even look like? 20 million new ones. It looks totally different, right? It looks nothing like the country you've always known. And what frustrates me to no end is the American people are so stupid, uneducated, and demoralized by years of propaganda, by our disgusting education system, our evil media. We're just so lost as a people. This doesn't apply to you. You're the hyper-informed. We're so lost as a people that we look at the destruction caused by these people and we can't put two and two together. So many people can't seem to put two and two together. I saw yet another angry New Yorker from Harlem. No, these are illegals. This is an outrage.
They snuck them in here in Harlem with no transparency. You know, we coming out and we see bunk beds being moved in. What's going on? And nobody was aware that this was happening. No one.
How do you think you would feel if you have a brand new luxury building, as they describing it, and people are living sometimes two and three generations in one apartment, and now you don't even want to give it to them. You want to bring outsiders in. Like, what does that look like? You got to take care of the residents that are already there, sufferings. We can't do that. This is a pigeonhole. This is a sign to this mayor. Right now, your people are looking at you. You have an obligation to your own black community to make sure we have our needs met.
It's time for action. It's time. We voted for you. I voted for Biden. I voted for Mayor Adams. It's time for action.
Did you hear what you just said, lady? They took action. They took the action you told them to take. You vote Democrat every time. Like a little lemon, you run to the polls every time. Well, that's what my mom always did. I've always voted Democrat. And now, because Democrats are America-hating communists, they're taking the power you gave them, and they're destroying the country. They're destroying your city. They're destroying your neighborhood. They're destroying your school. And you continue to act outraged at Joe Biden or Eric Adams or Democrats as a whole, when really the person you should be outraged with is the one you see in the mirror every night. Why do you vote that way? The American people have somehow divorced themselves from the results of their own decision-making, and it must stop. And look, it is understandable how people can be so lost, because remember, communism is based on two things always: killing people and lies. That's how the communist gets by. He knows his agenda is unpopular, always has been, always will be. How could a religion of death and destruction ever be popular? So he does two things. He kills the people who are in his way, and he lies. Every problem is a problem he can kill and or lie his way out of. Climate change is a big deal, right? Well, what do? Well, we just kill a few billion people. Babies are a problem. We don't want poor people having more babies. Hey, let's just kill them all. Look, they do the same thing when it comes to lies. The economy is a disaster. I don't care what they point to when it comes to the stock market or anything else. Normal people who buy gas, groceries, who just live life, understand that they're poorer now significantly than they were 3 years ago. If you're a Democrat, you're a communist, what do you do about that? Well, you can't fix the price of eggs or gas. In fact, you don't even want to. You want those prices to go up because the destruction of the middle class is your goal. It always has been your goal. So what do? You simply go on TV and you lie about it. You act confused. Elizabeth Warren went on television, United States Senator. Keep in mind, she knows exactly why the economy sucks. She gets it. But she just kind of went on there and did the, man, I don't even know.
Why do you think that people, all these polls show, like, a lot of voters look back on the Trump years and they think, they didn't like a lot about it, but they think the economy was good in the Trump years. And I know that, like, we weren't, I know, well, at the end, clearly. And then at the end when COVID happened and, you know, they figure, oh, well, COVID happened all around the world, and so, of course, the economy went south. But, you know, before that, Donald Trump was, he was presiding over an okay economy.
You know, again, I don't know. I can't explain polling. No, I mean, I can't.
No, I don't.
I can't, and I can't explain how the narratives come to be.
She knows exactly why people thought the economy was better under Trump. She knows why the people hate the economy now. But the communist has to do this at all times. And liberal Aunt Peggy watches that, and then she doesn't know either. Yeah, I don't know. Why did people like Trump's economy? Why do they hate this one? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. There's going to be an issue you're going to hear, whether or not you're passionate about this or not. You're going to hear about abortion endlessly between now and November because Democrats run on this issue because they believe, probably correctly, that it wins elections for them. Let's talk to Abby Johnson about this issue next. Before we get to Abby Johnson, let's talk about Lone Star Transfer. You see, I don't need or want you to take my word for it that Lone Star Transfer is an incredible company. They get you out of your timeshare legally and permanently. But don't take my word for it. Go look them up yourself. Go look up the Better Business Bureau. Look up the reviews. Look how many five-star reviews. That's what you get when you're successful 99% of the time getting people legally and permanently out of their timeshares. Go look them up and then make a phone call. Stop paying the annual fees. Stop suffering every time you have to stroke that check and make a phone call. Lone Star Transfer will set you free. 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
That's not what Roe v. Wade said. I said the three trimesters, and how it worked. Let me close with this.
I'm not for abortion on demand, just the three trimesters. Now, I'm going to have to ask Abby about this. I only thought there were three trimesters. I've always thought that's why they called them trimesters. Anyway, let's ask Abby Johnson, former Planned Parenthood director, now one of the premier pro-life advocates in the country. Abby, how many trimesters are there? My wife's gone through a couple of these pregnancies. I only thought there were three.
I know. I wonder how many Biden things there are. I think that's why it's called trimester, right? Because there are indeed three. I don't know. I think there's three.
Abby, this is, look, it wasn't always this way. It wasn't this way for most of my life, but abortion on demand has become the national Democrat platform, correct? I'm not missing anything there. This has become something. Obama was really radical when he started. That was kind of his stance. And now they're all this way now.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. You know, when I got started at Planned Parenthood in 2001, the overarching message was we believe in preventing abortion through using contraception. We believe in keeping abortion safe, legal, and rare, right? That was the forward-facing message. That completely changed, I would say, in probably 2005 to 2010. That really switched, and then it really became about access to abortion and access at any cost. And I do mean at any cost. I mean whether the woman survives the abortion or not. They don't care. That was when we started seeing states approving laws, passing laws like California, that allowed nurses to perform abortions, surgical abortions. I mean, I love nurses, but nurses are not trained to perform surgery. And I remember there was a time when there was actually a woman with Planned Parenthood sitting in front of a legislative body in front of California. They had done this pilot project, this study for Planned Parenthood, nurses performing abortions, and they had had all of these problems, right? Women having to have hysterectomies because of complications, sepsis, women permanently losing their fertility, right? The assemblyman says, "Don't you see this as a problem?" And the woman goes, "I mean, look, it's not about keeping women safe. It's about access." And that's really when we saw the change.
Abby, maybe this is a stupid question, but I find it fascinating. Why the change? It wasn't the overturning of Roe versus Wade. They were all for abortion at all times before that. What happened in that Obama years to now, that little window where all of a sudden abortion became, went from safe, legal, and rare to kill them all and let God sort them out? Something happened, and I can't figure out what it was.
So, I mean, I think, Jesse, I think it had always kind of been that way. I just think that their forward-facing message was more palatable, right? But I think at the top, I mean, let's think about the message of Margaret Sanger. I mean, let's just think about who Margaret Sanger was. Now, Margaret Sanger, of course, as you know, was the founder of Planned Parenthood. And, you know, Margaret Sanger believed in eugenics. I mean, why was Planned Parenthood founded in the first place? It was founded to eliminate the Black population, primarily the Black population, through widespread access to abortion and contraception. And finally, after 50 years of the pro-life movement screaming this from the mountaintops, finally, a couple of years ago, Planned Parenthood came out and finally admitted that, yeah, okay, our founder was a racist. And they took down Margaret Sanger's name from their New York building, and they changed the name of Margaret Sanger Street and all this kind of stuff. Planned Parenthood's foundations have always been sinister. And I think their organization has always been sinister. But I think what they put out to the public, you know, they were trying to make it very palatable to the public. I think they just kind of went, like, for lack of a better term, balls out a few years ago and just said, this is who we are. This is what we believe in, take it or leave it. Unfortunately, the American population has become so incredibly desensitized to killing innocent human beings, the culture took it and they ran with it.
How do we change that, Abby? Because I say all the time that we don't have, you know, a politician problem, we have a people problem, that I'm all for bans, ban this, ban that, whatever. But if the people love abortion, if women and men in the country think, well, I can just kill it, it's no big deal, then that's all the laws in the world won't save us. Are we winning that battle for hearts? I know that we're losing it on many fronts, but are we slowly shifting the culture back towards a culture of life?
So, I mean, it's kind of a hard question to answer because I think in a lot of fronts, I mean, certainly in the legislative front, when we look statewide, we are losing. And I think one of the reasons we're losing is because, you know, we're not as strategic as they are. We don't have as much money. I mean, hey, money is no problem when you're using our tax dollars to fund your campaigns, right? We don't have that access in the pro-life movement. I think also, you know, they have the liberal media in their corner. So the media is, you know, liberal media is pumping out whatever their message is. But we do have truth on our side. We have science on our side. We have medical technology on our side. We have logic on our side. And of course, we have faith on our side. And so I think, you know, what I find is that when I sit down and have a conversation with someone, even, you know, if I'm on an airplane and, you know, the person next to me says, what do you do? And I say, well, you know, I start telling them what I do. A lot of times the reaction is, oh, well, you know, I'm pro-choice, or, oh, I, you know, I really support Planned Parenthood. By the end of that hour and a half or 2 hour long plane ride, we're walking off both on the same side. When we're walking off, they're like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I believed the lie of abortion. Thank you for opening my eyes. But it's really about us as you know, people of faith or people of conscience, people with sanity, sitting down and having those one-on-one conversations with people and being bold enough to do so, you know, not hiding our beliefs, not hiding who we are as people, not hiding the fact that we're pro-life, not hiding the fact that we're pro-traditional marriage, but being right up front with it and saying, heck yeah, this is who I am because this is right. This is the right thing to believe.
Abby, when it comes to presidential politics, When it comes to all politics, it's obvious that abortion does cost us elections as we stand right now. Now, I'm a bit more militant about the issue. I don't care, right? It's life for me. I don't give a crap if it costs us every election. It's right, it's wrong, it's the life, that kind of a thing. In your opinion, you're much more of an expert in this area than I am. How should people running for office handle it? How should they talk about it?
You know, Jesse, I'm with you. I'm willing to lose every election from here until Jesus returns.
Yes.
As long as we're standing on the right side of life. I am not ever willing to compromise on these core foundational issues. I think one of the reasons that we have these really crappy candidates, I think one of the I'm so tired of hearing people say, well, you know, we just kind of have to hold our nose and go vote, or, you know, well, we just got to pick the lesser of two evils. The reason that we are in those positions each and every election is because we continue to compromise over and over and over again. And we allow our politicians to compromise over and over and over again. I mean, I'm sorry, but a 15 or 16 week ban on abortion, that's not good enough for me. And that's not going to be good enough to earn my vote. And I think that we need to continue to hold our politicians accountable. I think that we need to continue to voice our frustrations with politicians when they are not holding the line on these fundamental foundational issues. And I think the fact that Republicans continue to say, well, let's just take what we can get. When would we ever say that about murder? When would we ever, when any other time would we say that when it comes to murder? Well, I mean, okay, let's make murder legal sometimes. Like never, we would never say that, but we're saying it on abortion over and over and over again. Why? To win an election? The minute we stop compromising on these issues is the minute we will start winning. We have got to stop accepting mediocrity.
Amen. Abby, you are the best. Come back soon. All right. I love that. No more compromise. It's a baby. Baby doesn't need you to compromise with its life. All right. Why is Nikki Haley still in the race? We're going to make fun of Nikki Haley just real quick. It'll be like 30 seconds. We're going to make fun of Nikki Haley next. Before we make fun of Nikki Haley, let's talk about making some preparations for a future. I read an article from Claremont Institute, wonderful place. Claremont Institute, it was 2 days ago, and it was an article laying out our financial situation. And we're not talking, you know, 500 years in the future. They were laying out 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now. So that's your lifetime, my lifetime, hopefully. And they're talking about debt in the quadrillion. I gotta be honest. I didn't even know that was a number, but it is. The quadrillion. The value of the dollar is going down. Cannot be stopped now. But you can make preparations. Just because you can't stop, that doesn't mean all is lost. Get some hard assets and prepare for it. Now's the time not to cry. Now's the time to prepare. Oxford Gold Group is part of that preparation. They will get gold or silver coins in your physical possession. They'll get it in your retirement, so when that bubble finally pops, you don't lose everything you've worked hard for your whole life. They handle all this. They do it all for you. It's laid back. It's not a used car salesman. Buy it today! It's nothing like that. You might even qualify for $2,500 in free precious metals. Call them. Tell them I told you to call. 833-995-GOLD. 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back. I don't know why Nikki Haley's still a thing. Meaning, I don't understand why she's still in the race. This is something that's actually bothering me a lot. I feel like a lot of times, do you feel like this? Do you feel like you kind of have figured out these people and their motivations? And when something happens, you generally know why or suspect you know why. I'm like that. We're political people, you and me. We watch this stuff for a living. But I can't for the life of me figure out why Nikki Haley is still running for president. It's over. It's been over. Trump's going to be the nominee. Everyone gets that now. But Nikki Haley is still there. she won't leave. So either she's trying to be Trump's VP or there's some angle there I can't see. Either way, I woke up yesterday and there was an announcement that Nikki Haley would be doing, you know, some impromptu press conference. And everyone immediately thinks, okay, well, here we go. She's finally going to drop out of the race. And then Nikki Haley gets up at the press conference and does this.
Some of you, perhaps a few of you in the media, came here today to see if I'm dropping out of the race. Well, I'm not.
So why the special announcement? Oh, here's why. Nikki Haley decided she would do what many politicians in both parties do in this feminized America. She would go for the sympathy vote.
I wish Michael was here today. And I wish our children. And I could see him tonight, but we can't. He's serving on the other side of the world, where conflict is the norm. Where terrorists hide among the innocent, where Iran's terrorist proxies are now attacking American troops.
So let me see if I understand this right. She called a press conference just for attention. And once she got the attention, she used a cheap stunt to get the attention. And once she got the attention, she cried, trying to emotionally blackmail you into supporting her. That's the most woman running for president thing in the history of women running for president. And I'll tell you one thing right now. Her crying like that in public is totally disqualifying, completely disqualifying. Oh, but Jesse, she missed her husband. One, maybe she does, maybe she doesn't. I don't even care whether or not that's true. You can't cry and be the commander in chief like that. I miss him so much. No, no. And let me tell you something, kids. I know that in this nice, touchy-feely world, you're not supposed to talk like this anymore. Don't cry at work either. Men, women, talking to all of you. I can't do my TPS reports because my puppy's sick. Then go home and cry about your puppy. Here at work, we go to work, all right? No more crying at work. No more crying in politics. No more emotional blackmail. Your tears don't move me even that much. Totally disqualifying. If I knew nothing else about Nikki Haley, that alone would have cost me, well, would have cost her my vote. All right? All right. Let's talk some more. Let's talk about AGs and governors. In fact, let's talk to an AG. What is the role of an AG, a governor, in a red state when it comes to protecting you from an evil federal government? We have the AG of West Virginia coming on next. Before we talk to him, let's talk to you about your liver, about your filter. Got a box yesterday. Showed up on the front porch. No, it wasn't a new liver. It was my air conditioner filters. You see, 3 months are up. I buy the air conditioner filters that last 3 months, and it's time for me to swap them out. Why? Because the ones I put in before have all kinds of garbage in them, all kinds of dust and dirt, and I need to switch them out for the health of my family. Your liver is the filtration system in your body. When's the last time you helped it out? Been a while, hasn't it? All those toxins we eat, alcohol, all kinds of other things. Our liver is shouldering the burden and we don't do anything for it. That's what Liver Health Formula is about. It's a drug-free, natural way to support your liver. Help your liver help you. GetLiverHelp.com/Jesse is where you get some. We'll be back.
What exactly would have to happen to invoke the 25th Amendment in this country?
Obviously, in an ideal world, you would try to invoke the 25th Amendment, which I think is amply justified.
The man is deeply mentally unstable. The cabinet should convene immediately to discuss the 25th Amendment.
If he's crazy and incompetent and stupid, then we have to look at the 25th Amendment.
People in the president's inner circle have brought up the 25th Amendment at least 20 times.
This is 25th Amendment kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, I want to applaud West Virginia's AG, who's hopefully about to be their governor. I think he will, Patrick Morrissey, because he wrote a letter to Doam, Vice President Harris, and said, hey, it's time to do this 25th Amendment thing because our current president is non-functional. Joining us now, West Virginia's AG Patrick Morrissey. Okay, Patrick, what's the deal with this letter?
Absolutely. So I think most of America a couple weeks ago saw what happened with the special counsel report. I think people were rightfully outraged because the special counsel report made it clear that President Biden would ultimately not be vulnerable in a criminal prosecution because he didn't have the mens rea, the mental state, the mental capacity to be successfully convicted of a crime. And when a lot of us saw that, we thought, wait a minute, how can you not have the mental capacity to be convicted of a crime yet still function as the president of the United States? Either you're mentally capable enough to be president or you're not. And I think that this game that they're trying to play, that on one hand, he's incapacitated. On the other hand, he's perfectly good to be our commander in chief and discharge his duties. That is such an outrageous thing. And that's why I wrote the letter to the vice president urging her to invoke the 25th Amendment to bring the cabinet together, because the special counsel was clear in his reporting, and it would really be incumbent on President Biden to demonstrate that he is capable for the office. I don't think he is, and we need to really zero in on this inconsistency because I just think that he's not able to lead our country.
He's not. He's very clearly not. And you obviously have a very important position, a powerful position in the state of West Virginia. You understand all the duties that land on your desk every day. The president of the United States of America has to be the hardest working man in America. He can't be Grandpa Dementia and be on vacation 39% of the time. It doesn't work for the country. We need him.
Well, that's right. Can you imagine what happens if there's an international crisis that comes onto his lap? And what does a guy do that someone just described him as really mentally not capable of fulfilling his duties? It's a crazy place for us to be. And look, I'm no fan of Kamala Harris and her politics. No. And I think that the entirety of the Biden administration, as they're all hurting our country in so many ways. But at the end of the day, there are duties that people have when they believe that someone is unable to perform the duties of the office. And I think it very squarely comes up that this is a time when the 25th Amendment should be invoked. And that's why I put the letter out there. And I'm glad this is getting a good discussion nationally, because these are the kinds of things that we have to do. No one wants Kamala Harris, but this guy is certainly not fit to continue.
What is the role of red states now, especially AGs and governors of red states, yeah, to protect their citizens from a federal government that is incredibly hostile and getting worse and worse towards half the country? The federal government doesn't really, frankly, hide it anymore. So how do you handle that as the AG of a red state, as the hopefully soon-to-be governor of a red state? Your citizens, they can see what's happening to Trump, to the January 6th people, to many people. What can they expect out of a red state? What should they be able to expect?
Well, I think one of the things that we've seen is that Washington can't correct itself, right? I think we could see agreement on that statement from everyone across the board. And if that's the case, then it's incumbent upon the states to step up and to reinstitute constitutional governance in our country. And so the AGs play a very important role on that, because many of us have banded together to sue the federal government when the federal government crosses the line. If the federal government or an agency engages in unconstitutional activity, or an agency crosses the line, or they're trying to seize power for themselves, we step up and we say no. And in fact, our batting average during the Biden administration has been exceptionally high. We've won virtually all of our cases, and we're going to keep going. So the AGs are kind of the point of the spear on the legal issues. But you were right to talk about it more globally, because it's not just AGs that could make a big difference. Governors and treasurers, attorneys general, all of the state agencies that are within a state's command, you have the ability to all work together. And let's imagine for a moment that we could get 25 states all moving in the same direction, right? That red state direction. That's a powerful retort to the federal government overreach and the craziness of the woke left. And I see a scenario in the not too distant future, where states are coming together a lot more than they are right now, and then you get to bring the full weight of the financial, the economic, the legal, the policy, public relations, and political tools of those states to get back to constitutional governance, the right separation of powers between the federal government and the states. And wow, that will be a powerful thing when that happens.
What can an AG or governor and or governor of a state like West Virginia, what can they do to go after the gigantic cabal of all this ESG, DEI stuff that is so poisonous? This stuff, now you're the expert, I'm not, so please correct me, the idiot, if I'm wrong here. This stuff looks ripe for antitrust lawsuits. It's awful what they're doing. What can be done?
Well, first of all, I think you're seeing a lot of the AGs get together, and many of us have combined in a number of these activities, reviews, and investigations in order to make sure that we're pushing back on this effort to impose ESG on the American people. For those who aren't following this ESG debate closely, it's important for people to know how dangerous it is. It has this nice sounding name. It's about environmental, social governance, and people say they're trying to do the right things for climate or diversity. But in reality, it's a very dangerous effort to pick winners and losers in the marketplace and set up a system where you're going to have these public companies serve as actors of the state, where, for instance, the Securities and Exchange Commission can measure the climate footprint of all the public companies directly, indirectly, and anyone they have a contract with. And then, even though the SEC has no jurisdiction that I'm aware of on carbon emissions, they're going to put so much pressure to bear for these public companies to do what they want, even though the federal government lacks authority to do it. I see that as a huge danger for our country, and we know that there are real problems. That's why we're stepping up, fighting back against this, and you'll be seeing us file suit when the Securities and Exchange Commission finalizes its ESG rules. That's why you're seeing our office and many others step up and deal with the efforts in the private sector when these guys are coming together and colluding, trying to put pressure on companies and individuals with investment strategies and other policies in order to move away from a free market society. And that's just terrible. And we have to speak out against this. This is a permanent stain. If we allow it to occur, it's going to destroy our country. And I, for one, am not going to just let that happen.
I love it. Okay, finally, I have to wrap up with this. It's been eye-popping in recent weeks to see red states, states like Montana, Indiana, with parents having their children taken from them because of all this gender nonsense, insanity crap going on in this country. When people see something like that happen in California, they're sad and they're outraged, but they kind of shrug their shoulders and say, ah, it's California. When it happens in Indiana, people look around and say, what? This kind of thing's not going to take place in West Virginia, right?
No, it is not going to happen on my watch. I think that we have a very radical transgender community out there that's pushing for things that are absolutely absurd and unfair on their face. You know, I was the first one many years ago to come out and raise concerns with the Obama bathroom directive. I don't know if folks remember that, when they were trying to create these bathrooms and people could self-identify at the last minute. This is ridiculous on its face. And then separately, we're defending a law here in West Virginia that ensures that men are not going to be playing sports with women. But it gets even worse. I mean, there are efforts to engage in mutilation of our kids at the youngest level. And we just can't let that happen. We have to stand strong for our kids and our parents and not let some of these people just advance things that we know to be wrong on our society.
You're going to win your race. You are, right? Don't let these people take West Virginia back. I love that state.
But you got some people on the woke left, and there are even people running in my race. They're going to pretend to be conservatives. They're going to make things up, and they're going to use every tool in the book because, you know, look, you know, the mainstream media is not advocating for me, and some of my opponents are brand new, quote unquote, conservatives who wouldn't know the first thing about the battles that have been going on over the last 15 years. We do, and we've proven ourselves in the arena. That's why I'm excited to take this fight to the next level as the governor of the state of West Virginia, because all of that stops at the West Virginia border.
How about that? I appreciate it. Governor, oh, I'm sorry, Attorney General, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much. Grateful.
All right. We have light in the mood. I love West Virginia. Very underrated state. If you've never spent any time there, it's beautiful. It is beautiful. Wonderful people, too. Anyway, light in the mood. Before we get to light in the mood, you know that you can listen to the podcast of my radio show, thefirsttv.com/podcast. All of our podcast stuff is there. That's where you can listen to the wonderful Jesse Kelly Show. World famous. I said that myself. Anyway, we'll be back. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And honestly, I think in the future, you're probably going to see more and more local news segments on our Lighten the Mood, because there's so much local news out there, right? Think of all the communities, large and small, there are in the country. There's so much news every single night, multiple channels bringing you a local news story. And there are just so many of these wonderful little gems in there. Little gems like this one.
After the break, we're going to interview Eric Weihenmayer, who climbed the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest. But he's gay. I mean, he's gay, excuse me, he's blind. So we'll hear about that coming
okay.
up.
Okay. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.